All right, so because everybody's talking about it right now, or at least everybody in the lefty blogosphere, let's talk a little bit about the gas holiday. Now, your man, McCain, was the first to propose the gas holiday tax, and I thought it was absurd then, as did a lot of people. And then, lo and behold, Senator Clinton came out and said it's a great idea. So what are your thoughts on that?
It is a great idea. And I think Hillary's, she said the exact right thing. And of course the lefties will, you know, the left blogosphere, wonkish as it fancies itself, will criticize her. Mm-hmm. But who gives a shit what a bunch of economists think when you're running a do or die political campaign? Uh-huh. Okay? And to discount, you know, $30 like it's nothing. You know what? Frankly, it's a bit condescending. And I think to a lot of people, it's like, hey, I'll take $30. You know, absolutely. Give me the $30 now. So, look, does it make sense policy-wise? It doesn't change anything one way or the other. Like I said, it's a gimmick. But the idea that somehow she should be in agreement with economists rather than her base of blue-collar white people who could care less about, you know, what the impact is on global warming or, you know, it's such a lunatic idea that somehow she should, because she says, I don't care what the economists think, that's the wrong thing to say. That's exactly the right thing to say.
Right. I mean, I guess I have a slightly higher appreciation of her base than you do. I mean, I think that they know that $30 is pretty much $30 over the course of 3 months. And I think some of the economists even worked that out and said it doesn't even come to $30 over 3 months. That, you know, they have sort of worked out that this is pretty trivial. And a pretty, what was the word that, well, the word you used, a pretty condescending way to approach the problem, right? The idea that, that blue, or working class, blue collar, white voters are going to be dumb enough to fall for, buying them off for $30, over the course of 3 months strikes me as being remarkably condescending.
They'll take their $30. I'm just saying, what's the long term solution that she's going to apply right now in the next 3 months to help them out? I mean, what's the solution that's actually going to do more than give them $30?
Well, I don't think there is, right? I think that's the problem, right? That these are all long term issues. But I guess the difference is that I think people understand that. I think people understand that simply eliminating gas or making a gas tax holiday for 3 months and awarding them $30, which probably won't even amount to $30, is not a way of solving the problem. And
But is it good politics?
No, I don't think it's good politics, because I think that not only economists and not only lefty blogosphere types notice that this is pandering, right? I mean, I think that the, you know, blue-collar people, working-class people, understand that this is pandering as well.
People love to be pandered to.
They may love
to be pandered
to. I disagree.
I just fundamentally disagree. Mm-hmm. People like to be pandered to. People like to be given money, you know, saved a couple bucks. People like it when you take a tax off.
Right,
just don't see how this plays poorly.
No one's
going to think,
she's
not really addressing the serious issues.
This is condescending to them, right? This is saying, all you need is $30. Give me your vote and I'll give you $30, right? I won't solve your problems. I won't, you know, do anything serious about this, but I will give you $30, right?
There's nothing serious to be done. She's doing
serious to be done, which is what the Obama campaign has come back with, right? That this is pandering, that this is silliness. And, you know, overall, I don't think it's really going to, I don't think it's going to transform the dynamic in either Indiana or North Carolina. But second, I think that, I don't think it's going to help her at all. Overall, I think it's going to hurt her. Because I don't, you know, we say people love to be pandered to, people love the $30, but, you know, I think they also want to have problems taken seriously. I don't think this is what Clinton is doing right now, and I think they know that.
I mean, there's no serious solution to gas prices. I wish they would all say, "Hey, we're going to tap Anwar." You know, that'd be a good start. But you know, beyond starting, you know, drilling oil wells in a bunch of wildlife preserves and off the coast of Florida and places like this. I mean, what's the solution?
Well, one solution would be, you know, not to invade countries like Iraq and thus drive up the price of oil. But that die is cast, right? You can't do anything about that now. But telling people that there's a solution, and the solution is giving them a short gas tax holiday, is condescending to them. It's acting like they're stupid. And I think people will realize that Hillary Clinton is acting as if the voters are stupid.
No, I disagree with you completely. I'll take my $30 back.
That's what blogging heads is about. It's about us disagreeing. So,
What's that?
It's about us disagreeing. If we agreed, there'd be no point in having us here.
You know, I think she'll win more votes with this than she'll lose, and I just think Obama, you know, he won't pander on this. He's going to draw a line in the sand over a stupid gas tax. It just strikes me as, you know, of all the things Obama needs to do a little more pandering. I think he's making a big mistake on this. Not a big mistake, but I just don't see what the sense is. I don't think anyone's going to sit around and say, oh, he's on the side of the economists, so he's really on to something there. So here's an extra $30.
Right. Well, we have different approach or different ideas about how the electorate thinks about these issues. And another thing we're going to be worrying about in 100 years, as you alluded to earlier, is Iraq. So what are your thoughts? I mean, last time we talked about Iraq. What are your thoughts on what has changed, what has gone on since then?
It's been a lousy month. It's been a disheartening month. You know, I don't think anyone was under the illusion that, you know, casualties were going to go in one direction for a year or two. It's been a bad month, and they're going to have to get their act back together. But I got to tell you, I think there's a real positive sense about the way this Sadr thing has turned out, which was contrary to the way it had been reported for the first several weeks. And I think it looks more and more like he's been marginalized. It looks more and more like Maliki is serious about taking on Shiite militias. It looks more and more like the Sunnis and the Kurds are responding to that. We've seen the Sunni bloc come back into the government. I think there's every reason to believe that we will continue on the path we've been on of sort of a general gradual increase in security and continued reconciliation at the national level between now and November. It's also possible that things could go to hell. But I think we're more likely than not to see the general positive trend continue through November than to see a total collapse. But I mean, you know, a very unpredictable environment, obviously.
Right. I mean, I guess that on some issues I would be mildly more optimistic than your take, but on most I would be more pessimistic. You know, I mean, everybody knows that April was the highest casualty month since I think last September. You know, casualty rates have never struck me as the ideal way to think about order in Iraq, because casualty rates can be manipulated by either side. They depend on the tempo of operations. And it seems to me that, you know, while there have, I mean, I guess the four Marines died 2 days ago in Anbar, but it seems to me that, and you may know a little bit more about this than I do, it seems to me that most of the casualties are a result of, U.S. casualties are a result of greater tempo operations in Baghdad against Sadr City. And that simply represents a operational choice rather than the idea that there's more or less disorder in Iraq at any given time.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you look at the numbers. Kilcullen wrote a great piece last summer when casualties were still extremely high. They were about 120, 130 a month. And he said, look, if you look at the number of troops that we have in country now, you'd actually expect them to be much higher than they are. He ran through the numbers. Relative to the number of troops we have there, they're very low compared to what, you know, proportionally what they have been in the past. And yeah, I mean, last month was a major month in Iraq. A lot of things happened. There was a lot of conflict. And I think that conflict was generally resolved well. So I don't think this was just the month where we lost 40 guys and, oh, what do you have to show for it?
Right. I mean, I think it was like,
I think we have something to show for it. Now, it is disconcerting when you see four Marines killed in Anbar, because that has been such a quiet place for the past 6 to 9 months. So that was troubling. But, you know, you're never going to totally eliminate these roadside bombs, I suppose. Well, not never, but, you know, I certainly don't expect that to happen anytime in the next couple of years.
Right.
The four Marines was very
yeah,
troubling.
No, it was. I mean, and I took particularly note that it was in Anbar, because, I mean, that has been such a quiet province recently.
Yeah, I mean, we went months without an IED in Anbar that killed any Marines. Now, look, I mean, the Marines have been itching for a fight. I think that's part of the reason why they want to go to Afghanistan. I think they feel like they've pretty much done their job in Iraq, and, you know, there's not much left for them to do. It's sort of clean up time and send the army in.
Right.
But You know, you just hope that this isn't part of someone raveling there.
Right. I guess that, and you know, we discussed this last time too. I guess I am less optimistic about what happened in Basra. I mean, it seems to me that the Iraqi army was fought to a standstill by Sadr's militias, and that what was decisive in that was U.S. and British support, and we even had British artillery support towards the end. What that indicates to me is that, yes, it's good to have friends who have big guns, but at the same time, that Sadr's militias, that the militia groups, simply retreated in the face of a much heavier firepower. And that heavier firepower has nothing to do with Iraqi state capacity, but has a lot to do with the decision on the part of the United States and Great Britain to become engaged in intra-Shia battles, intra-Shia battles, battles between Shia gangs, right? We decided that we would support one Shia gang, which, you know, happens to dominate the Iraqi army, against another Shia gang, which has been excluded from the Iraqi army, and that was the decisive element of that battle in Basra. And that battle seems to be replaying in Sadr City right now.
Yeah, I just... Look, you know, the way the New York Times has since reported it is that the Iraqi army has, in fact, cleared all of Basra. Mm. So the idea that this was fought to a standstill, it's not clear to me. Obviously, the Iraqis are not capable of operating on their own. But I would also point out that it's unlikely that the British could clear Basra without American support.
Right.
Nobody can operate. No NATO country can operate anywhere without American support.
Right.
Is basically the case.
The British don't have to. You know, they don't have to invade Liverpool and clear out the gangs with their army. Right. And that's sort of the difference. They have 5,000 troops in Basra, and so they're not really expected to drive out all the gangs. They don't need American support to clear out Manchester. The Iraqis do need American support to clear out what should be one of the easiest cities to clear out, right? a city that is in the Shia heartland, that's extremely important in Shia politics, and that when you have a Shia-dominated army and a Shia-dominated government, right? I mean, this is an easy case, or it should be an easy case, for the Iraqi army, and we didn't see it be an easy case for them.
Well, I mean, I don't expect, at this point, I don't think we should expect anything to be easy, but the important thing is that, the result is much better than it was anticipated at first. I mean, the press botched this horribly. The press reported this as though this was a major victory for Sadr, that Maliki had been humiliated. And in fact, you know, what is it now, 2 months later? That's not the way this plays at all. Now it's shifted to, oh, well, we're backing one Shiite group over another, and there's no difference between them. Well, bullshit. One of them is the government that's democratically elected.
Can you say that on
blogging? And if the Iranians want to back the democratically elected government of Iraq, you know, more power to them. I'm all for that.
I'm glad that you've reached that point, Michael, because, I mean, it seemed I was going to go into all this stuff about the Badr Brigade drawing pensions from Iran and the people who now make up the Iraqi or the Iraqi government that have been democratically elected being the same people who fought against Saddam Hussein on the behalf of Iran during the Iran-Iraq War. I mean,